Our gospel lesson this morning has everything in it. It's got suspense, it's got narrative, and it's designed to hold you and bring you into the story. Listen now to the good news according to Matthew from Matthew chapter 2. In the time of King Herod, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem asking, "Where is the child who has been born King of the Jews? For we observed his star at its rising and have come to pay him homage." When King Herod heard this, he was frightened, and all Jerusalem with him. And calling together all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Messiah was to be born. They told him, "In Bethlehem of Judea, for so it has been written by the prophet, 'And you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for from you shall come a ruler who is to shepherd my people, Israel.'" Then Herod secretly called from the wise men and learned from them the exact time when the star had appeared. Then he sent them to Bethlehem, saying, "Go and search diligently for the child, and when you have found him, bring me word so that I may also go and pay him homage." When they had heard the king, they set out, and there ahead of them went the star that they had seen at its rising, until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw that the star had stopped, they were overwhelmed with joy. On entering the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they knelt down and paid him homage. Then, opening their treasure chest, they offered him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they left for their own country by another road. May we be blessed in the hearing of good news. When they saw that the star had stopped, they were overwhelmed with joy. On entering the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they knelt down and paid him homage. Several weeks ago, I had the opportunity to see the Nativity story, and I found it a gentle portrayal of the infancy narratives in Matthew and Luke. And I have to confess that I liked it a great deal more than I did the portrayal that Gibson did of Jesus as a character in Die Hard or Mad Max in The Passion of the Christ. The depiction of the Magi in this nativity story particularly intrigued me. Three scholars, obviously good friends, see something in their studies of the night sky that drives two of them to leave the comfort of that study to seek the one to whom the omen points. And the third one joins later, which is a nice little bit of conjecture. They travel, and they find what they're looking for in the most unlikely of places. The most unlikely of places. Isn't that what the Christian faith is about? Isn't that the essence of Christian faith? The paradox that there is more to us, that there is more to our world than what we can see and what we can know, that our world is created and held in being through the love of the Creator God, that humans are made in this God's own image and likeness, and that God became one of us, identified with us at the deepest point of existence in order to restore us to proper relationship. Some would describe the Magi and Christian doctrine as a result of those positions as starry-eyed. Starry-eyed is defined as having a naively enthusiastic, over-optimistic, or romantic view, unrealistic. In one of the little online dictionaries that they do, when they do the little classic literature example of the use of the word starry-eyed, they give Anne of Green Gables. Any of you that have ever read Anne of Green Gables know that Anne was often starry-eyed in more ways than one. But she could also be an incredible pragmatist, and she had a lot of pluck. Maybe that's one of the better parts about Christianity. I'm not so sure. Because, you see, I have to disagree with this definition fully of starry-eyed. I have to disagree, and I do so respectfully. Because I find nothing naive, I find nothing over-optimistic, romantic or unrealistic in this story or in what it teaches us. What I find here is a challenge. It is a challenge to see and to think and indeed to be in a new way. a different way. So I call all of us today, as Isaiah did long ago, to lift up our eyes and look around and to become starry-eyed again in the way that God intended us to be starry-eyed. Theologian and storyteller John Shea wrote a marvelous piece a couple of years ago called The Magi Ride Again. And in it, he cites an essay by G.K. Chesterton on three modern wise men. Now, like Shea, I went looking high and low for the original and I couldn't find it. He derived his telling of it from Fulton Sheen, and now I quote Shea. So being in the company of these two chaps, I suppose a third Irishman can't do it any harm. Nevertheless, the story is still wonderful. It seems that these modern wise men went to a city of peace, a new Bethlehem, and they wanted to enter this city and proffered their gifts as passports of admission. The first put forth cold gold and suggested that it could buy the pleasures of the earth. The second did not carry frankincense. He brought instead the modern scent of chemistry. This scent has the power to drug the mind, seed the soil, and control the population. The third brought myrrh in the shape of a split atom. It was the symbol of death for anyone who opposed the ways of peace. When they arrived at the Palace of Peace, they met Saint Joseph, and he refused them entrance. They protested, "What more could we possibly need to assure peace? We have the means to provide affluence, to control nature, and to destroy enemies." Saint Joseph whispered in the ear of each individually. They went away sad. He told them that they had forgotten the child. The tale is a critique of contemporary wisdom. The wise men come with the benefits of wealth and technology, and they think that those assets will bring peace. The story is suspicious of these gifts, but it does not deprecate them, for they are not evil in and of themselves. It views them naturally, suggesting that in themselves they will not provide access to the city of peace. The real problem is not what the modern wise men have brought, but what they have not brought. They have forgotten the child. In so many ways, the mainline Protestant churches have become like Chesterton's modern wise men. We have forgotten the essence of the message of the Epiphany, of the showing forth of God, what the Eastern Church calls theophany. And we have become over-dependent upon a limited rationality and sometimes an overdeveloped concern for social consciousness. Chesterton portrays this difficulty of modern humanity in a poem. He says, "Oh, we have learnt to peer and mopore on tortured puzzles from our youth. We know all the labyrinthine lore. We are the three wise men of yore, and we know all things but the truth." We need to remember that God is God, and we are not. We must become starry-eyed again in the right way and remember the child and the message that the child teaches us, a way of truth, a way of love, a way of being in peace, which, as Paul says, brings us access to God in boldness and confidence through faith in Him. The early church read multiple scriptures on this day that pointed to the various ways that God revealed God's self to us in the Christ. And this custom has been continued in the Eastern Orthodox churches. Peter Chrysologus, one of the great teachers of the early church, whose surname means "of golden words," reflected on these scriptures and preached something in the 5th century that I think all of us would do well to remember and seek to understand. He said this: "In choosing to be born for us, God chose to be known by us. He therefore reveals himself in this way in order that this great sacrament of his love may not be an occasion for us of great misunderstanding. Today the Magi find crying in a manger the one they have followed as he shone in the sky. Today the Magi see clearly in swaddling clothes the one they have long awaited as he lay hidden among the stars. Today the Magi gaze in deep wonder at what they see: heaven on earth, earth in heaven, humanity in God, God in humanity, one whom the whole universe cannot contain, now enclosed in a tiny body. As they look, they believe and do not question. As their symbolic gifts bear witness, incense for God, gold for a king, myrrh for one who is to die. To Today Christ enters the Jordan to wash away the sin of the world. John himself testifies that this is why he has come. Behold the Lamb of God. Behold him who takes away the sins of the world. Today Christ works the first of his signs from heaven by turning water into wine. The star, if we look, still points the way to the child. And when we find the child, we find ourselves again. Humanity in God. God in humanity. When we can become at home with ourselves, which I believe begins by becoming at home with God, we experience a sense of peace, a sense of wonder again, and a sense of fulfillment. It has been suggested that the majority of human problems stem from unresolved loss. These losses, of course, can take many forms. The loss of trust, a broken relationship, the feeling of loss at a perceived change in ourselves or in our situation. These losses, left unhealed or unmended, then serve to color and then even to oppress our lives. The light of the star and the birth of the child within us are meant to bring reconciliation and healing, to fill the space those losses leave in our lives, and to make us whole again. We can experience the healing, the reconciliation that we need among those who gather around the child of Bethlehem, those who do not forget him, nor his message of love of God and love of neighbor. Some years ago, as I was being interviewed to take this pulpit, I was asked what I thought Jesus saved us from. And I recall that my answer was ourselves. Ourselves. In fact, I came across the book in that I ended up writing because I ended up responding to, I think, 42 theological questions and wrote a 16-page single-spaced paper in response. My wife wouldn't let me get at my books, otherwise it might have been a tad longer. But that was just off my head. But I think that was one of the best answers I've ever given. What does he save us from? Ourselves. Because you see, sometimes we get so focused on ourselves. We get so turned inward. We get so individualized that we miss the essence of what it means to be human, which is to be focused on the other and on others. And Epiphany reminds us of what our true focus is meant to be. And that is what I mean to be starry-eyed in the right way, to be able to experience that fullness of what it means to be truly, fully human. Let me give you another example of someone whom I believe was starry-eyed in the right way, Samuel Johnson. Johnson was a moral philosopher, an essayist, a critic, and he did the first English dictionary. In fact, I love his definition of a lexicographer, a person who works with words and puts dictionaries together. Harmless drudge. I remember reading Boswell's Life of Johnson and being captivated by the expansiveness of this man's scope of learning, his down-to-earth approach, and his practical faith. Johnson came back to me just recently through an article in the most recent Smithsonian magazine, to which I would recommend that you take a look at it. And it's an article that deals with how Johnson dealt with melancholy, what we'd call depression nowadays. The author points out how Johnson really practiced what psychologists now call cognitive behavior therapy on himself and sometimes on his friend Boswell and on others. And he told Boswell something. He said, "To have the management of the mind is a great art, and it may be attained by experience and habitual exercise." He also reminded him to look at the big picture, reminding him once, "Consider, sir, how insignificant this will appear a 12-month hence." His other point, and it makes such wonderful sense, was this. "It is certain that any wild wish or vain imagination never takes such firm possession of the mind as when it is found empty and unoccupied. If you are idle, be not solitary. If you are solitary, be not idle." We might take that to heart and try and do something with filling our time other than turning on the television set. Perhaps if we were more focused on God, perhaps if we were more focused on the larger picture of life together, we would be able to see and to say the same thing. After all, at root, Christian spirituality really simply teaches us how to once again be at home in ourselves, to be at home in ourselves and in our world. But we can't practice it without the child who makes this earthly house of ours a real home. Chesterton brought this out powerfully in the concluding stanza of his poem, The House of Christmas. To an open house in evening, home shall men come, to an older place than Eden and a taller town than Rome, to the end of the way of the wandering star, to the things that cannot be and that are, to the place where God was homeless and all men at home. The child comes to save us from ourselves, from our own knowledge and from our own self-focus. As John Shea says, the mind that is alienated from the earth is never life-giving. The Magi need to enter into the house where Mary and the child are, or else they will journey forever over the earth and never be at home. When they worship the God who lives on the earth, the mind that studies the sky will be saved. The star continues to shine, and we continue to remember it so that we can find God present in ourselves. Becoming starry-eyed again has nothing to do with being addled or being a naive or even childish. It does, however, call us to be childlike and to open ourselves afresh to a sense of wonder and of curiosity and possibility. Like the angel said to Mary when she asked, "How can this be?" For with God, all things are possible. When we become starry-eyed again, we remember the child and we remember the gifts. All of the wonders of this great wide world in which we live, they all come into proper perspective, and the life and the healing of God flows through each one of us and out from us into the world around us. We stand on the threshold of a new year yet again. And as through too many years, the sounds of conflict and of war and distrust echo all around us, just as they did when three wise men followed a star, found God in a child, and found their way home by another road. Perhaps this is the year for us to become starry-eyed again and to allow our faith in the child to make a difference in how we live each day, becoming instruments of God's healing and homemaking in our world. The star still beckons. Are we starry-eyed enough to follow it and then find our way home?